Today on Talk About That, John takes us inside the competitive world of teen Bible quiz and shares one of the worst parts about his time as a youth pastor. Meanwhile, I threaten to record the podcast shirtless and ponder the strange phenomenon of mascot genders for school sports teams. Also, a conversation about hope. Today's episode is not sponsored by Black Licorice, for people who love candy but hate themselves. Here we go.
It's your favorite podcast, we hope. Let's talk about that.
I don't think, maybe even in like top five would be enough.
Yeah, I don't have to be number one. I've never been number one at things.
Have you ever been number one at something?
I mean, I've won.
Sword drills? Remember those?
You know, I was always second place in Bible quiz, which is what we called. We had Bible
quiz. Who was your nemesis?
Like, I'd win.
Do you still know that person? Have you found him on Facebook and be like, this son of a gun?
It was that crazy Johnny Davis. No, I don't know. I don't remember. No, I was always like, I don't know. I was always, it's kind of like Watermark Church in Dallas, Texas, always got voted 5 years in a row the second best place to work in Dallas. And like Southwest Airlines was always number one.
Well, yeah, you're in Dallas.
But then Southwest would be like number three and someone else would be number one. And they never could make number one. It was always a different number one, but they were always number two.
I don't think there's any way that an airline would be number one right now.
Not
to work.
Right now.
Your best place to work.
Not right
you're just
now.
Dealing with unruly passengers and angry.
I think you got a flight coming up, I think, soon. I think you should get thrown off and video it and get some traction.
I'm getting duct taped. Have you seen this? They're duct taping people.
I did see this.
What is going on, man?
What is wrong with
First people? Of all, how do they have duct tape handy? That makes me feel like they're patching these wings with duct tape. You know?
Why
is duct tape even on the plane? Just in case.
Hey, guys, if you get stuck
you
up there.
You see one of these flaps hanging out, like, go over there.
If you see liquid coming out the side.
Because sometimes you're waiting on the plane, you're like, why haven't we taken off yet? Then they're like, all right, we're ready to go. Yeah, if you hear a tearing sound, get off the plane.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that guy did. He was being really unruly. And I think they said, we're not going to divert these 150 people.
Yeah.
We're just going to duct tape this guy down. They got in trouble for it, I think. I don't think it was like, oh, that was the right thing to do.
Did they get in trouble?
What is the protocol?
Isn't it like you're the captain of the ship? Like
maybe.
And
you can, if there's mutiny, you shut it down.
You do whatever, man.
Yeah.
I'm the captain.
I wasn't mad because I was like, clearly the guy was out of hand. But at the same time, like, what if they decide one day that you asking for an extra thing of pretzels is duct tape worthy?
You're such a slippery slope kind of guy.
I am, bro.
No,
they can't duct tape us all.
It's sure they can. It's a lot of duct tape.
It is, man. You just show up, the whole cabin's just...
I am the guy, and you've been with me on flights, I am the guy that when they say put your computer away, doesn't.
Yeah.
And like when they come by, I hide it.
Well, sometimes they ask you, it's like 30 minutes left in the flight,
yes.
And you're like, you don't need this.
Or you know we haven't even taxied away yet. Go ahead and put away your big devices. I'm like, I could get another 300 words written.
They used to say, they've changed the rules on us. That's the thing, too. They used to say, if your laptop is 2 pounds or more. So I bought a MacBook Air because of that. But now they just say, large laptop, shut them down. And I'm like, I bought this because it was... And I think it's because it could become airborne and like bludgeon someone inadvertently.
Yeah,
isn't that the idea of it?
Can an iPad Pro do the same? You know what I'm saying?
Look, it is a slippery slope. You're making the argument. Yeah, an iPad Pro could do some damage, bro.
I don't...
A phone could hurt you.
I don't know what the deal is with it. Like, just let me be my computer.
When they used to say, shut it off, they wouldn't even let you have it on at all during... And I always thought, like, the first 15 minutes and last 15 minutes of a flight, shut off everything. And then they started letting you use your phones in airplane mode, which nobody goes into airplane mode.
No.
But I always thought the reason was they want your full attention. Because if something bad's going to happen on the flight, it's going to happen the first 15 minutes, last 15 minutes. Takeoff and landing is when, like, things go really wrong. So they just want you to be, like, not have headphones in blaring Van Halen.
I think that's what I would want to happen if the plane's going down. Like, look, just let me...
Well, how many flights have you been on where you get a little bit of turbulence? Like, if it ever did start happening, I'd be like, can we repeat those announcements again? I've not listened one time to the announcements. Can you go over those one more time?
I was screaming.
What's up with the oxygen? Do I do mine? Then
Reggie had a story in our first book where he was on a plane and it like suddenly dropped like 40 feet. And there was a guy who had been
Well, it probably wasn't 40 feet. 40
no,
feet.
No, it was like a.
Well, I'm saying it's probably a lot more than 40.
Oh, well, like, whatever it was.
To feel it, it probably had to be like, you know, 100 feet.
And the guy had been all like completely a different kind of guy. And suddenly he like got on his knees after wow. they and like begged Jesus into his life kind of thing. Like it, yeah. was, he thought he was
no,
dying.
No atheists in foxholes yeah. kind of a mindset.
And guess who was there? Reggie.
Reggie.
Like how
he was like, too late! And he just, he duct taped the guy to the seat.
Oh, I love a Reggie Dab story that ends like that.
That's right.
And I told that guy, you go straight to, you know, he does have a story in the new book. So mm-hmm. he has two plane stories, because Reggie has a lot of plane stories. You know, he's a 3.5 million miler with Delta.
Good grief.
And so I don't mind telling this, because the book's coming out, and you know, we talked, and the publisher would like for me to talk more about the book, Johnny, and you would right. too. You've already told
it's
me.
It's fine. Talk about your book.
So he has two plane stories. One plane story, he gets on the plane in first class, because he's Reggie, mm-hmm. and he has all these miles, and this guy behind them says to the flight attendant, oh, just says out loud, that guy's got my seat. And Reggie doesn't really turn around. He goes, you know why? Because Delta's going black. He says this. This
oh,
is
wow.
like this year or last year. I mean, it was like very recent. Reggie's,
so he thinks he got a first class seat because he's black.
He thinks that Reggie got the best first class seat
okay.
because Delta's trying to favor black people.
Like they're
over
overcompensating,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guy keeps making these comments and Reggie doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
And so the flight attendant walks up to Reggie and is like, hey, would you like for me to shut him up? And she was like, he was like, ma'am, do whatever you want to do. She goes back there and says, hey, Mr. Smith or whatever. You know, it was Johnny Davis, the Bible quiz guy.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't believe
he
it.
He came back in. He wasn't. Like, he may know how to get to those scriptures, but he's not reading them very well.
So,
comprehension.
She says, hey, Mr. Davis, I see here that you're a million-mile flyer with yeah. Delta, and we're very grateful for you. But Mr. Dabbs is a 3.5-million-mile flyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is his seat, and we're going to need you to stop harassing him. Whew. And so, she just, like, shut him up. And so when they land, they uh-huh. stand up, and the guy goes, what do you do for a living? And so, you know, Reggie Dabbs, I've never, and this is not rude at all, but Reggie engages everybody.
Yeah.
And so Reggie says, you know what, sir, you've forfeited the right to have a normal conversation with me. And so maybe we can try again next time. Have a great day. And leaves.
Whoa, nice.
Because and the way we write that is he wasn't really. He just wanted to know how a black guy had a job good enough to be
right,
ahead of him
very,
on the
yeah.
plane. Yeah.
Well, it's almost like I've been in shows before where there was like a heckler.
Mm-hmm.
And hecklers, there's different kinds of hecklers. There's the you suck heckler, which is very rare. What you usually get is the helper heckler.
Mm.
They're like, ah, they're repeating your punchlines. They're woo or whatever.
Yeah.
And finally, this comedian in front of me like had to shut him down and be like, dude, you can't. What are you doing? Stop it. And then but they didn't remove the guy, which the club just dropped the ball on that. You're supposed to remove hecklers if they get unruly.
Yeah.
They wouldn't remove the guy. And he kept like shouting out stuff. And then after the show, the guy wanted to come over to him and be like, hey, man, I didn't mean anything by it, man. You're really funny. I didn't. And the guy was like, no, you ruined the show for this whole room of people that paid to be here. So don't come over and try to, like, explain yourself now and be friends with me.
Yeah.
Like, well, here's what I meant was, it's like all you had to do was shut up.
Mm. Heckler's remorse, we call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's your book.
I'll tell you guys, if I wrote a book
Johnny Davis story.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Heckler's it would be great to, like, weaponize this podcast against people who have slighted us.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Like, we instead were so neurotic. We weaponize it against ourselves and apologize for our former selves when what we should have been doing is what everybody else does, which is be like, this girl, you know, broke my heart and here it goes, oh, Genevieve, you're going down. I dated a girl named Genevieve, evidently.
That's your Johnny Davis's ex-girlfriend.
Oh, that's right.
You have weaponized it a few times.
Oh, have I?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember.
Mainly against old producers that we've worked with.
Right, and you don't want me to say their names.
No, I just am like, I'm so uncomfortable.
But it's like, it's almost like that thing of, first of all, they're not listening.
Well, first of all, that's offensive. How do you know?
Nobody's like, oh, are they? I want to make sure my name's not being bandied about. They don't care. They didn't have the awareness to be good to us in real life, so they're not going to be like finding our podcast and listening for their name drop.
Maybe they think that they're the one that gave us our start.
It's true. That could be.
Yeah.
There are people that lack self-awareness could really have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your second thing, though?
Oh, I don't know.
And you were like, first of all.
Well, yeah, I just don't think... Oh, it's the Anne Lamott thing of like, if you wanted to be represented better in my art, you should have behaved better.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, like if you write a, confessional book...
Yeah.
Because you're working on this now. You're talking about your history with, even with the racism book, you're talking about racial reconciliation. You're talking about your own views kind of morphing over the years and adapting. And you're having to confront, you know, ideas that we were necessarily sometimes raised with.
Yeah.
That you're now going, well, this probably was an incorrect or at least ill-informed viewpoint. But you also don't want to come out and be like, my family were backwoods. What, like you? That's not true. It's a nuance. There's nuance to it. So, but if you don't tell the whole truth of like, this is my experience, then you're not, it's not a confessional book. It's not true.
Yeah, it's hard because it's hard for me to confess for others because as much as we act like we're an individualized society, we are in community, whether we like it or not, with family, with people around us, with work, you know, all those things. And when you confess something, it usually is not happening in a vacuum and in isolation. It's happening with other people. And so that's an interesting thing I have never vocalized before or articulated, that I struggle when I'm confessing something that it is indicting.
And you're roping in other people. And you're making them sometimes feel a certain way about like, well, I don't necessarily think that what I did was whatever.
They may not be where I am on it, for better or for worse.
And that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not my job to get them there.
Yeah.
A lot of that, we talked about this before, but, you know, when I began confessing some things about wishing I had a fuller viewpoint of gospel things in youth ministry days, it really is hard for kids, and I get that now, who have a very, you know, sort of idealized, rose-hewn look at this fun, great experience we had for these 4 to 6 years. And it's true. And I don't want to rob them of that because it was awesome, you know, but so it's hard.
And there were so many good things. That's the hard part. Like you feel like you're tearing the whole thing down because of some bad building blocks.
And that's the deal. I don't do a very good job. I'm really working on this. I don't do a very good job of seeing the positive in my own life. It's funny. Like when there's a win, I'll say this. I can't say what it is. There is a pretty major interview.
Well,
pretty major interview that's requested us for this book in October.
Well, la di da. Oprah's coming out of retirement.
Like it's a major interview that like is just kind of a once in a lifetime thing, especially for Christian authors. The first thing I think when it comes, I mean, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Is I'm thinking, this could fall through.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of COVID.
Immediately.
This could fall through because the news cycle pushes us out. Like, and like, it's this scarcity mindset of don't hope too much.
Yeah.
Because you've been hurt before, you know. But you realize then, in some ways, I don't enjoy things. Like, I'm not enjoying that, like, moment. I guess I would enjoy it if it actually happens, but I have 2 months to wait, you know, for that. Which is great, but I find myself I mitigate my future disasters. I try to.
Yeah. You have to take a risk in hoping to get the true joy out of the experience. So you protect yourself from the hope and then you just have this numbness.
Yeah.
Like when good and bad happens, you're just like, well, this is just... You take the good, it's the Facts of Life theme song, basically. You take them both and there you have, I don't know, John.
Well, yeah, and another thing is I'm always moving to the next opportunity. It's like you get in such perpetual motion that it's hard.
Hang on a second. I got a great C.S. Lewis quote to remind me of.
Oh, here we go.
And this is what I'm summing up what you're saying. To love it all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. Hang on.
T-Mobile.
It will change. It will become... It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. So it's like when you... That's really more about love and care for someone else. But it's also that thing of like we let ourselves... We give ourselves the ability to be hurt by an opportunity going away or a relationship going away. And so you can decide not to do those things, which a lot of people have done. And I think the pandemic has probably worsened that.
Yeah.
Because you feel like this is the right thing to do, to isolate.
Right.
I'm a hero, you know, in essence.
Right.
But there's consequences of that, too. Mm. Like, it has its own set of you know, obstacles, its own set of consequences when you lock yourself away from hope or whatever it is. So, I don't know. I'm definitely not a pie-in-the-sky optimist, but I try to let myself feel like I'm worthy of good things and that, you know, I've worked hard for good things. But, yeah, it's when even now the calendar's starting to open up a little bit and I'm like, yeah, but Delta and this could all be taken away. I'm living in that the window is closing. Like, what is going to happen? It's hard. It's hard to hope. It takes courage.
Yeah, you know? It does. And the older you get, the harder it is because you have more evidence of things that hurt. And you have more. But the thing is, I think I remember the negative more than the positive in some ways, just the way I'm made.
Yeah.
Because I was very, you remember this, I was a very hopeful.
Man, until you 20s. Met me.
Oh, my goodness. Until you brought reality.
I hate that Johnny Davis.
Well, I mean, Laura used to accuse me of being, you know, an optimist.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. She was.
Oh,
of course,
right.
Of course, pessimists are pessimists. They're
realists.
Right.
Well, yeah, and you look at an optimist as almost somebody that just doesn't have all the facts.
Yeah.
This poor, naive rube. It's like Mayberry. When you see people skipping rocks on a lake, you're like, don't you know the world's on fire? What's wrong with you?
Right. Yeah.
You feel better than them. It's a way to put yourself above them.
To Laura's defense, she was right about a lot of that. I did not have a lot of the facts. But
yeah.
There is a...
And now you're like, now I'm down here with you. This is just the best.
This is not fun. No, I mean, I think that's where faith comes in. I mean, there's something, one of the endorsements for the book says, you know, we don't have to bury our head in the sand or lose our head in all of the mess and the cynicism and the outrage. Like, it's like one or the other. Bury your head or lose your head. And it's like, man, somewhere in the middle of my eyes are open to what's happening, yet I hope. But I can't hope in outcomes because you begin to lose that. And then when you're young, you hope in outcomes. And when something good happens, you're like, ooh, anything good could happen, you know. And when you get older, you're like, okay, a lot of good happens, and then there's a lot of disappointment. And so now what will I hope in? If I've been hoping in positive outcomes, especially when you finally even attain some of the things you worked for, you finish college, you get the job, you know, talked about that, plenty of places of life, you get married, you have children, like you begin to kind of check off that list of things that have always been so key to you that are now attained that once seemed even unattainable in certain areas of life. It really causes you to stop and go, what do I really hope in? Do I have hope? For me, that's when faith has been harder yet way deeper and more rewarding because hope now becomes it's a way more conscious choice.
Yeah.
Now for me to go, hey, today, and I love how recovery says this and our friend John Elmore says this, that my goal today is to be sober from my worry, my anxiousness, my control, my anger. Worry seems to be my trigger for all of those things. Like if I can be sober from worry for this 24 hours, then that's a good day. And I try to string together as many of those days as I can. That's really how recovery happens. You know, he was an alcoholic for years and years. He's like, if you ask an alcoholic, I mean, this dude was drinking 2 bottles of wine and a fifth of whiskey a day. Like his doctor said, you're going to die. He said, if you would have told me, hey, could you think you could be sober forever? He's like, not a chance. But someone asked him one day, do you think you could be sober for the next 24 hours? He was like, well, I could try that. And then eventually those 24 hours,
you string it together.
So for me, like, can I hope today? And it sounds cliche, but it really is when I get older, the cliches are there for a reason. I'm going, okay, wow, that's not cliche at all. That's really all I have. Lots of good things and bad things happen, but I know they're temporal. I think that's the thing. Like if a good thing happens, if the interview happens, like I know now that's awesome. That's not going to satisfy all the things in my life. There's a day and time I probably thought of.
Right, probably won't be friends anymore.
Right.
You'll be like, oh, this is the dream. I've attained.
I'm bigger than Johnny now.
You leveled up.
But honestly, what does that really mean?
And now you'll just have your own solo podcast without me.
Just talk. yeah, I don't know if I can do my own podcast.
Well, it's like but you need to level up. It's like there was a Seinfeld I was watching the other day, an old one. Well, they're all old. But Elaine's dating this guy who she is in, like, he's a med school intern, basically. And she goes, you are a doctor? He goes, no, I've taken the test, whatever it's called. Is it the MCATs? I don't know what it is. Anyway, says, I've failed it a bunch of times, and I'm not going to keep trying. She's like, I could be dating a doctor? And so she, like, basically starts, like, withholding intimacy from him while he studies. So he, like, gets really focused, and he passes. She's like, this is the dream of dating a doctor, you know. Like, tell all my friends I'm dating a doctor. And then he becomes a doctor, and he immediately dumps her. And she's like, what? He goes, I knew that when I became a doctor, I would break up with whoever I was with and go find someone better. That's the dream of becoming a doctor. Like, it's just such a... So that's you. You want to just... You know, John, move on.
That reminds me of another classic show called Victorious on Nickelodeon.
That's a classic show. I'm not aware of
Ariana
that show.
Grande's character.
Oh, okay.
She was in a play, but she wore her blonde wig and blue eye contacts out to afterwards with the friends, and some dude meets her, and she forgets she's wearing it, and they had this huge connection. The next day, they were like, well, I mean, you told him you're a redhead with brown eyes. She's like, oh, gosh, I forgot. And I was like, oh, he'll love you exactly for who you are. Don't worry about it. So, you know, at the end, she takes off her wig and all, and he's like, you're beautiful, but I'm just into blondes. And he just walks away.
Wow.
Like, it was like a, you know, but they somehow made it funny. But it was kind of sad for a
tragic
second.
Tragic and awful.
Well, then the other guy who really likes her wrote her a song about how
she's... And she's Ariana Grande, and she's beautiful. So
she went on to be a billionaire. I think
it worked out.
That's
true. It did. Okay. Because money solves everything. Is that what you're saying, John?
Yeah, well, Johnny...
Good grief.
I don't know. If you give me some money to spend the time looking for the answers, does that one help? It's...
What's the old... I think David Lee Roth used to say that money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a boat, and it'll pull up right on beside happiness. You can see it from the boat.
Wasn't there a country song? They say money.
I think that's the song. It said, but it'll buy me a boat. It'll
buy me happiness. Maybe so, but it'll buy me a boat.
Yeah, that's David. He stole that from David Lee Roth, basically.
So all of y'all out there who are country fans are like, why are you struggling?
But I think David Lee Roth, they might have said yacht. So yacht is not a country word.
Like, no.
Country stars don't want to buy yachts.
No. First of all, the sea is silent.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yacht.
Yacht.
I would like to know the etymology of the word yacht.
You know, on Sirius XM, they play, there's a station that plays what's called yacht rock, and it's basically like smooth, soft rock. It's like, you know, nice. We built this city, and, you know, Christopher Cross.
Yeah.
Sailing takes me away. It's a great, and you know what? I love it. I don't care. Like, I'm an old person now, and I'm like, this makes me feel good.
Wow.
You can just zone out.
Just put on your orthopedic
shoes.
It's
not challenging in any way. Yeah, it's terrific. Politics in it.
Put your wart medicine on.
Yeah.
Just sit back with a heating pad on your back.
Jeez. I got a lot of ailments in your version of me.
Well, you don't do that every night.
I got problems, evidently.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
So we were eating lunch beforehand, and this is going to be a little shorter podcast because you have to go to an interview. And the deal is, the reason it's shorter is we went to leave. We went in, it was sunny, and we came out. And
it was
a deluge.
Frog strangler. It was bad.
That's a real... Frog strangler is almost as country as gully washer. That's a real... Yeah. Did you ever grow up here in gully
washer?
My church, a gully washer.
It's out there.
A frog strangler. I tell you right now, you got one?
I don't know. Frog strangler sounds like a amphibious serial killer. He's out there. We're searching for him. If you've seen this frog.
But we ran to our cars. We're like, the podcast won't wait. Our listeners right now.
We did. We decided eventually. Because you wait for a while, then you're like, it's not letting up. And we just came out and just got soaked.
And I'm in jeans today. I'm still wet.
Yeah,
I'm actually soaked. I'm standing at my standing desk because I don't want to sit down in it.
And then we drove not even a mile to the church. We get out. It's sunny.
Absolutely
here.
Sunny.
So either we could have just waited and it would have passed.
I don't know if it would have or not.
Or it was just like we went to the dividing line of...
You were like, it's coming towards again.
Between two
like
worlds.
It's tracking us.
That's right. It's circling back.
Yeah. So, yeah, my sweatshirt.
So we go through for you guys.
Guys, we do this because we love
you. We're damp right now.
Oh, my goodness.
As we say this. It's affected our performance. There's no doubt.
There's no doubt about it.
We do it for you.
Couldn't have been the big lunch that we ate.
I'm just going to take off my shirt.
It's audio. I don't think you are. Nobody can. This is my office, sir. You will cease and desist.
It'd be weird if somebody just came in, like somebody on the staff of the church, and we're both shirtless. You don't understand. We were at Longhorn, and then they're like, we don't care.
We don't care. I'm out of here. Well, that's funny.
It's a very masculine podcast. We're just shirtless bros doing podcasts together.
We're not the kind of bros to do that.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
We were taught shame for our bodies.
Absolutely. You should shame and feel shame. You don't shame others, just yourself.
It's like almost like a Garden of Eden thing. Like, where's my fig leaf?
Right.
You know, you should feel like if you're naked, you should be immediately, like even when I get out of the shower, I'm like immediately like, I know where the towel is. I'm going to get to that towel as soon as I can. It's not like, I think I'll walk around naked for a little while. It's like, where's the towel?
Yeah. I don't have anything I can say that's appropriate.
Well, like so in gym class, I remember in gym class, I was very fair-haired, very blonde, very almost white my hair was when I was in grade school. And I found this out later. I wish I'd known it then, but like people who have fair hair, they don't get underarm hair early. It's a correlation, or it's very fine and fair. So underarm hair was such a big deal to me. Because I was in sixth, seventh grade, some of these kids started just sprouting just bushes from underneath their arms, just amazing shrubberies.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
They got alfalfa in a headlock.
And I don't know why I wanted it, because like that's the dumbest thing ever now, because it just means your underarm's going to stink a lot more. Like it just, it's not good.
I think mine holds a good smell in. That's what it does. It traps the good smell.
Maybe. But I was just like, I was like teased for that.
Wow.
And I remember, and now you grow up, you realize, like, it's the stupidest thing ever to feel like that was a big deal. But I just remember thinking, like, yeah, they looked like it was bad.
Yeah, adolescence is brutal. Like, it's the little things are
You don't
want
to
so
be the first
big.
Person to get underarm hair or the last person.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's like girls with boobs, too. Same thing. It's got
to
be.
I remember, if you want to be vulnerable, I remember when my mom or dad, one, told me I needed to wear deodorant.
Yeah.
I remember I like pitched a fit. I was in tears out of embarrassment. It was like this weird, like, embarrassed that someone insinuated that I didn't smell good, which was true. But that I didn't want it to be known.
Teenage boys, bro. I'm telling you, like, if you ever been a youth pastor for a junior high group and gone on a lock-in or
there's
anything.
There's a distinctive smell.
It is. Oh, my gosh.
But it's not just teenage boys. I'll be quite honest with you. When I would go in to clear out hotel rooms to make sure that we didn't leave anything behind, the girls' room smelled way worse.
Interesting.
Part of that is the amount of product that had been sprayed into the air on top of the existing smell.
Because, we came up and Axe body spray was becoming a thing, and it was like, this will mask it all, and no, sir, it does not.
No, it does not. And then I think I was upset, though, because it was like this trend. It's time to be more grown up, and I want to be a kid.
Yeah.
Like, there's a part of me, I'm sure a part of me that wants a girlfriend, and there's a part of me that wants to be a kid and still watch cartoons. It's like that weird, remember we used to have kids in, like, sixth grade, seventh grade, when we were doing youth ministry, and you had, Laura and I talk about this all the time, you had some, like, 12, 13-year-old girls who were struggling with sexual temptation, their boyfriends. And you had some 12, 13-year-old girls who were still playing with My Little Ponies.
Right.
In the same group. Like, you had this, and neither, you know, it was just like, there was no moment where it all
just
it clicks different for everybody.
Even when I was watching, we went to Sadie's volleyball game, and I remember thinking, like, these girls are all around the same age, and yet they look wildly different. There were some that looked like they were 10 years old, and some that looked like full-grown women.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
And then they have to just deal with, like, this is how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I've not hit my growth spurt yet or whatever it is, and I just got to live in this in-between.
Yeah. And boys deal with it probably more than
the
girls.
Because girls grow. They have their growth spurt early on or whatever.
Boys that, you know.
The girls get taller than all the boys at first. It's a weird moment.
Oh, yeah.
The first Sadie Hawkins dance.
By the way, you and Curry being at the games meant a lot.
Great. Oh, it was so good. And Sadie's so good.
She's doing well. She's doing well. She's
I think I'm a good
of...
luck charm. She served like 11 in a row.
She did.
11 in a row? Some of them were just like straight up aces, could not be returned.
And you know, you can go back to old episodes to hear the story of the time Uncle Johnny was there and we were down like 24 to 18, which means
25 is game point.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you make one mistake, it's over because it's a match point. Every time you hit the ball, someone scores. And Sadie scored all the way back from 18. We won the game. She had to score like 26 to make it work.
Right. And right at the game point. It was like two before, I think.
It was silent in the gym.
And metal bleachers. And for some reason, I was looking at my phone. I can't remember if I was going to take a picture or something. My phone just dropped out of my hand.
Yeah.
Clack, clack, clack.
And I was like, what are you doing? And she hit it anyway.
It was right in the middle of her backswing.
Yeah. I do think you're the good luck charm, though. That's good.
I'll take credit.
That's good.
They won. They won both. They beat both schools.
They did. It got close a few times.
Those girls were vanquished. They're not even schools anymore.
No, they decimated.
Took their accreditation away.
Yeah, it was like, sorry.
It's like, if you can't play volleyball, right. I don't know how you think you're going to educate these
kids. Where
are
you going to learn? What business do you have learning how to read? You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
One thing we noticed, and your father-in-law talked about this too, they had banners up, and some of them said it was whatever school, and they're the Eagles, and some of them said Lady Eagles, and some of them said Eaglets.
Eaglets, yeah.
Is it Eaglets or Eaglets?
I don't know. Eaglets
or Eaglets? I think it was Eaglets.
Isn't this a made-up word?
It's like an anklet. It's like an eagle that you wear around your ankle. What isn't? But he was just like, why do we differentiate?
And it was like 1 year.
Like,
to
why
the
can't
other.
It just be an eagle? Like, why does it have to be a lady eagle? And I was like, why are you trying to take away gender roles?
Wow. Oh, he loved
it. It was
that.
Really unexpected. Are you trying to say gender is a construct?
Oh my goodness.
For mascots, I think it kind of is, and it's dumb.
Well, you know, it's a touchy subject though, because we had a AD at Tennessee that removed Lady Vols.
Oh, okay.
Remember this? It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so when Fulmer was 80, he brought it back. And like that was the thing. Because Lady Vols is a long-term
right.
tradition.
And we have a lot of championships associated with that
right.
name.
And so they brought back Lady Vols. Because a lot of universities was getting rid of the
But it is odd. Like if you never had it, it'd be weird to add it. Like if you're the Tulane Green Wave, you don't need we're the Lady Green Wave. No, you're not. You're just the Green Wave.
I mean, I don't know. I think, again, what people were upset about with the Lady Vols was it was like.
How do you tell the Lady Green Wave from the male Green Wave?
Some male.
You gotta lift up the wave.
It was like some male athletic director decided that this would be more egalitarian. And they're like, no one asked us what we wanted.
Yeah, he was trying to be more.
Lady Vols.
He was trying to outwoke the people who were like, this isn't an issue with us.
Right, we actually
want to be.
This.
We like the distinction.
Yeah.
Okay, I can go there.
We are a more storied program than the men.
Okay, but I will say this. At least pick and choose one and don't be the Lady Eagles and the Eaglets.
Yeah.
Pick one.
If I remember correctly.
Because it looks like two different schools. You're like, what era was this?
I think it was like one banner. It was like 2011 said Lady Eagles. 2012 said Eaglets. And 2013 said Lady Eagles again. It was like they had switched.
Somebody,
I want to know what the athletic director's.
They fired that person.
Controversial backstory for that particular middle school out there.
Why are we trying
Wilson
to
County?
Erase history?
Oh, my goodness.
I've seen it 100 times. We can't get a banner. We can't get a ladder tall enough to get that banner down. We're just like, you know what?
History.
Just leave it.
We can't get up there. Who's got time for that?
People protesting outside.
And listener, we know it's been short today, but we hope that you have enjoyed the time that we've taken as we ran through a rainstorm to get here.
Yeah, because we care.
And Johnny's fancy life, we're having to run over to an interview now.
I'm sorry.
I hope that you feel better up there in your ivory tower, Johnny.
It's great up here, I got to tell you. I can see the whole city.
I get room service. It's amazing. Yeah. But no, hey, thanks for listening today. Make sure you go to our website.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Yeah, where you can
see. All of our episodes are archived there. Mm-hmm. You can even go to our Patreon, kick in a few shekels. We appreciate our Patreon supporters so much. They help us make more things and get the word out about the show.
Yeah, yeah. You can also, officially, you can go to notsoblackandwhitebook.com.
Oh, nice.
NotSoBlackAndWhiteBook.com. And you can start reading a sample chapter, and you can pre-order the book there. And I would ask listeners, if you have engaged in what we've done here on this podcast and you want to hear more, go pre-order that book. That will help out when it comes out in October. So check it out and read some.
Get us on the bestseller list. I say us like I'm involved.
No,
at all.
I'll take you, Johnny.
Okay.
You're going with us.
Thank you so much.
When I list it, it's going to be like me and Reggie and Johnny.
Thank you.
It's like... By Reggie Dabbs.
But less so Johnny.
And John Driver with Johnny W. Featuring.
Forward by Johnny Davis.
he has to put his title. You know, 1987 Bible quiz champion. Yeah. I'm going to put that on my resume now. The runner up. So, Hey, thank you guys for listening, though, and send us your questions, your comments, anything you want us to talk about, because that's what we do here on
Talk About That.
Hi, I'm Beckett Cook, host of The Beckett Cook Show. I lived as a gay man in Hollywood for many, many years until I had a radical encounter with Jesus 13 years ago. Since then, I've gotten my master's degree in seminary and published a book called A Change of Affection. On my podcast, The Beckett Cook Show, I sit down with fascinating Christian scholars and thinkers to address the lies of the culture and bring the biblical truth to bear on those lies. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search for The Beckett Cook Show on your favorite podcasting platform.